Listen to the best of the Church's music for the Epiphany season at LutheranPublicRadio.org. Sacred music for the Epiphany season, 24/7. LutheranPublicRadio.org.
The Bible tells us how good and pleasant it is when God's people live together in unity.
When you do not have people in America who believe in America's uniting founding ideals, you don't have America anymore.
Jesus, unlike any other individual ever in history, came back from the dead. That places Christ in a category with no one else.
Luther's great legacy is that we are beggars. We bring nothing. Simply to thy cross I cling.
Radio operators, commercial and amateur alike, just love Issues Etc.
Well, it's taking place. It has taken place today, a march that if you turned on the television, you just might have seen some media coverage of it. I'm not talking about the Women's March. I'm talking about the March for Life, which year after year has broken records of attendance. Not that that necessarily is the big deal about this march. Maybe the biggest deal about this march is if they were still alive today, the matriarchs of the women's movement, would they have chosen to attend the Women's March on Washington, D.C., or the March for Life and the protest against abortion, especially after Roe v. Wade? Greetings and welcome to Issues Etc. We're coming to you live from the studios of Lutheran Public Radio in Collinsville, Illinois. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in on this Friday, January the 27th. We're going to start our conversation today talking about feminism and the March for Life. Glenn Stanton, a focus on the family, will join us from Washington, D.C. to get a little review of the march and talk about those matriarchs of the women's movement. After that, is there a scientific answer to the question, when does life begin? There's new research on human embryos that determines something about their autonomy. Anna Maria Dimitri will join us, author of a recent column for Public Discourse titled Science, Embryonic Autonomy, and the Question of When Life Begins. Terry Mattingly will join us to talk about media coverage of the White House, of the marches, and a recent statement from Stephen Bannon, who's White House chief strategist, telling the media that they need to keep their mouth shut and just listen for a while. Then Chris Roseborough joins us for This Week in Pop American Christianity. We'll talk about the teachings of one of President Trump's spiritual advisors, Paul LaWhite. She also appeared at the inauguration. And it's Issues Etc. Soundbite of the Week. You will vote for Soundbite of the Week in the last half hour of the program, 1-877-623-MY-IE. Talk back at issuesetc.org. Via Twitter at IssuesETC or at our Facebook fan page, facebook.com/IssuesETC. Glenn Stanton joins us to talk about feminism and the March for Life. He's director of Global Family Formation Studies at Focus on the Family and author of the books The Ring Makes All the Difference, Loving My LGBT Neighbor, and an article for The Federalist titled The Women Who Started Feminism Would Have Joined the March for Life. Glenn, welcome back.
Hey, thank you. It's good to be with you.
So we're
a little winded because I just got done with the march. Marched a long way.
So were Susan B. Anthony, Elizabeth Cady Stanton, the other matriarchs of the women's movement, were they alive today? Which march would they have chosen?
No doubt, absolutely. Not only would they not have joined last week's quote-unquote women's march, they would have protested it deeply, and they would have proudly voted today. And that's not just us saying, you know what, let's sign them up for our movement. These wonderful and bold ladies were fiercely pro-life. And I would add to that, not even just pro-life in the sense, but fiercely anti-abortion. They published radical newspapers. Susan B. Anthony and Elizabeth Cady Stanton, they both together published a kind of a radical paper called The Revolution, and they were regularly demeaning and decrying abortion, calling it child murder, calling it, you know, infanticide, saying that, you know, the person or the man that forces a woman to have an abortion is guilty of murder. They clearly saw the life in the womb as human life and life worthy of respect, dignity, and protection.
Paint a picture for us of what you participated in earlier today, the March for Life there in Washington, D.C.
Yeah, it was really, really exciting. I mean, this is the 44th or the 45th March since 1973 when the Supreme Court said in Roe v. Wade that abortion was legal on demand and that there were essentially no limits upon abortion. And what happened today was citizens from all across the country, just simple people, came and marched from the Washington Monument down by the White House up the hill to Capitol Hill right in front of the Supreme Court building. And it's interesting because the line, the parade of people lasted miles and miles and miles. And what I was kind of impressed with was everybody was packed in so tight. It's like, you know, everybody, you know, loosen up here. Our line would be longer, but everybody was packed in real tight. And there's kids there. There's young women there. I stood with a group from Lesbians for Life, because I just thought they'd be interesting to hang out with. There were bikers there. There were old folks there. I mean, just all kinds of people. And that's the remarkable thing, is there's a lot more diversity in the pro-life movement than there is in the pro-abortion feminist movement. But it was wonderful. And, you know, you didn't see any anger. You didn't see anybody, you know, saying they'd like to blow up the White House like we had Madonna say last week. Just a peaceful, fun, interesting, chill crowd that has really been mourning millions and millions of deaths of the unborn in our nation. Unfortunately, it's interesting. I saw one young woman, probably 20 years old. She says, "A third of my generation is missing because of abortion." They recognize the implications of that. And that's exactly what the founders of feminism, Susan B. Anthony, Elizabeth Cady Stanton, a number of lesser knowns, and that's what my article in The Federalist points to. The first woman to ever run for the presidency in the United States was a woman named Alice Paul. She wrote the original Equal Rights Amendment in 1923. She was viciously, I mean that in a good way, pro-life and anti-abortion. She said that abortion was not a source of power or independence for women, but, quote, the ultimate exploitation of women. And it's really remarkable. I mean, it's a rare matron of the feminist movement that was not strongly opposed and denouncing abortion. They saw it as harmful not only for the unborn, but they saw it as harmful to women themselves. And the thing that I'm proud about in my article is that I link to actual scanned pages from the original writings of these ladies. There are archives of them, and these pages, these papers that they published, you can see them scanned in the archives, and I link to every one of them where these quotes come out, so the reader can see, you know, don't have to just take my word for it, but wow, here's where these ladies actually said this, and in the 1920s, 1930s, you know, long before the radical feminists came along.
On Election Day, Susan B. Anthony's gravestone, if you remember, was covered in "I Voted" stickers by women who kind of did a Rochester, New York kind of pilgrimage there. And they're celebrating, the best construction, their freedom to vote. You say that true freedom depends on a respect for all life. What do you mean?
Well, I mean, that's such a strong statement, because when we start to say that there is one part of humanity that doesn't deserve freedom, that's where slavery came about. When we say that there's one part of humanity that doesn't deserve freedom, and on this issue, it's based on location in the womb, and it's based on size. You know, it's you know, kind of microscopic. We can't see it. So therefore, those little beings in the womb, which every one of us were at a point, those beings are not worth full life. When we deny life to any part of humanity, we deny life to every one of us. I mean, it is a very dangerous kind of slippery slope. And again, Susan B. Anthony, I mean, you know, the feminists will see her as a hero for women's rights and things like that. She would scold modern feminists today, you know, with just no limit in passion, to say, you are not feminists when you say that motherhood is a curse to being a woman, and that a woman asserts her independence and strength by killing her unborn child. And on top of that, to say that abortion is health care when abortion is not healthy, that abortion is a woman's right to choose when it's a woman's right to choose what the male wishes for her is, I don't want you to be pregnant because then you're not available to me sexually or domestically. You know, that's, if men would step up and if men would take responsibility for the children that they have, there are not many women who would have abortions. But, you know, in many ways, and the early feminists said this, in many ways, abortion is created by the, you know, the problem of the man problem, not stepping up and being the man there.
Why is it that feminists will still hail the likes of Susan B. Anthony, but hide the fact that that the protection of the unborn, all life, was so central to her way of thinking of herself as a woman and an American citizen?
Well, I mean, see, that's the kind, I mean, that's an important question. And really kind of what they're celebrating is a caricature of these women. You know, the women as they actually were, as you actually read their writings, they do not fit into, in fact, they bust out of it mightily, the modern feminist script. And these feminists just simply don't know their own history. You know, we honor those who came before us by really knowing and learning what it is they said. But feminists today, the pro-abortion feminists, the radical feminists, you know, they just assumed that those feminists way back then were the same kind of feminists today. And, you know, as if Susan B. Anthony and, you know, Elizabeth Cady Stanton were, you know, pro-LGBT rights and, you know, all this other kind of stuff. No, these were largely conservative women. They respected the family. They respected marriage. They respected life. They just had the radical idea that women should be seen as people and ought to have equal power to men, have equal voice to men, and have an equal vote with men. The other thing that a lot of feminists today do not recognize is that much of the motivation behind the suffragette movement was to be able to vote in prohibition, because too many of these women, and it, I mean, it's just clear history, many of these women saw themselves, I mean, they were leaders in the temperance movement as well, because they saw their husbands going off and unfortunately spending their paychecks in taverns and, you know, not being able to keep their jobs. So they wanted to make alcohol illegal, so for domestic reasons. And that is where a lot of their motivation came from. They wanted to make a difference in the world. They knew that motherhood was a virtue. They knew that family was a virtue. They knew that being a wife was a virtue and that life was a virtue.
Glenn Stanton is director of Global Family Formation Studies at Focus on the Family. He's author of the books The Ring Makes All the Difference, Loving My LGBT Neighbor, and an article for The Federalist titled The Women Who Started Feminism Would Have Joined the March for Life. You can find these books and read his Federalist article at our website, issuesetc.org. Click Listen on Demand. And he joined us live from our nation's capital. Glenn, thank you very much for being our guest.
Hey, blessings. Thank you so much. Bye-bye.
We're going to stay on the subject of that unborn life, the question of embryonic autonomy. In other words, when does the human embryo, when does it essentially operate free from outside influences? Well, the research might shock you because it says from the very beginning, from the meeting of sperm and egg. Anna Maria Dumitru will be our guest to answer that question after this. Male and female sex differences, contraception, transgenderism. These are some of the topics covered in the Issues Etc. Book of the Month for January, Ethics of Sex, From Taboo to Delight. You can find out more at issuesztc.org or call Concordia Publishing House 1-800-325-3040. Ethics of Sex contributors include Issues Etc. guests Ben Mays, Tom Eckstein, and Richard Stuckwish. Ethics of Sex, the Issues Etc. Book of the Month for January.
Have you been too busy to get your associate's, bachelor's, or master's degree? Concordia University, Wisconsin offers 50 online educational options. Find out more at issuesetc.org. Click the Concordia University online logo and enter the program code ISSUES to waive your application fee. Concordia University, Wisconsin is here to strengthen and support the church. Lifelong Lutheran Learning. issuesetc.org and click Concordia University, Wisconsin online.
Clear, concise, consistent. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Metro East Lutheran High School in Edwardsville, Illinois engages young adults in a Christ-centered environment, delivering academic excellence and spiritual growth to develop Christian leaders for tomorrow. We provide a Christ-focused alternative to public high schools. Many of our students receive tuition assistance. To help us provide tuition assistance to more students, go to melhs.org and click on the giving page, or call me, Dr. J. Krause, principal, at
618-656-0043.
Listen to the best of the church's music for the Epiphany season at LutheranPublicRadio.org. Sacred music for the Epiphany season, 24/7. LutheranPublicRadio.org.